The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Together one of these days. How can you be
as nice as me? I'm not from the same slice. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt on a Friday. Dr. Larry Arnn will be along later in the show. Let me do the rundown. Fully vaccinated people can stop wearing face masks. Physical distancing in most settings, CDC says. Now, that's an extraordinary change of heart from CDC. Here is Rochelle Walensky on fairly recently with Shep Smith Wednesday. So it's 3 days ago, 2 days ago. Rochelle Walensky is the head of the CDC 2 days ago. Rochelle Walensky, cut number 8.
Everybody in my work group is wearing a mask. Everyone. Why do we have to? We're all vaccinated. Why do we have to wear masks?
So we have to look at the science with regard to how the vaccine has worked in the real world setting.
But isn't it true, Doctor, and forgive the interruption, but isn't it true that once you're masked, the science shows that if you're around others who are masked, you're okay?
Once you're vaccinated, yes?
Yeah, we're all vaccinated. Yes. You know, it's like, what do I get for being vaccinated? Can't I take this off?
Right. So we were looking for science to ensure that the vaccine works just as well in the real world setting as it did in the trials. We need to ensure that the vaccines are working against all of the circulating variants that we have here in the United States. We're following that carefully. And then we need to make sure that you're not an asymptomatic carrier if, in fact, you're vaccinated. So all of that science is emerging. That's what we're following and we will use to update our guidance.
So that was Wednesday. This is Thursday, the next day, Rochelle Walensky on a Zoom COVID press conference, cut number 9.
Additionally, we are accumulating data that our authorized vaccines are effective against the variants that are circulating in this country. On this slide, you can see a study published just last week that demonstrates how effective the Pfizer vaccine is against the common circulating variants in the United States, B.1.1.7, as well as other variants like B.1.351. Additional studies confirm that the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson vaccines are also effective against circulating variants. Finally, we know that in the rare event that people get infected after a vaccine, the resulting infection is more likely to have a lower viral load, be shorter in duration, and likely less risky of transmission to others. Considering all of these factors, the data on vaccine effectiveness, the science on their ability to protect against circulating variants, and our growing understanding of the low risk of transmission to others, combined with universal access to vaccines for those 12 and older, today, CDC is updating our guidance for fully vaccinated people. Anyone who is fully vaccinated can participate in indoor and outdoor activities, large or small, without wearing a mask or physical distancing.
All right, stop. So that is a 180-degree change in 24 hours. I'm glad they admitted it. I do not believe it was based on any new science. I believe it was based on finally someone saying to them, you know, you're incoherent, your credibility is shot, nobody listens to you anymore, and people aren't wearing masks anyway, give in. And I think much of it is political. I do not fault Rochelle Walensky. She's new in her job. You know, they're just figuring out. All scientists are terrible communicators. This is my belief. The ones I see on TV, they really don't know how to communicate, with the exception of Dr. Francis Collins, who's been on this show twice in a week, and he's amazing. I should add him out here from the beginning. But Rochelle Walensky, good on you. Nobody, if you've been vaccinated, throw away the mask, unless you're going on an airplane or a bus. Now, that doesn't make any sense, but they still want you to wear it. And again, this is where the inconsistency comes up. If you have been vaccinated, you cannot transmit anything with a viral load that's dangerous. And if you're on an airplane, it's like being in a closed, especially a short hop, 45-minute flight. It's not dangerous, but they're still asking because they really can't give up the control. Colonial Pipeline paid a ransom. Now, I had dinner last night with Robert O'Brien, former National Security Advisor, and we were talking about this. And they paid the hackers a ransom, $5 million. There are bad consequences to that, very bad consequences to that. You've just incentivized everyone in the world to pay ransoms, which is why the Trump administration would not pay ransoms for hostages. President Obama did, and that led to more hostages. So Colonial's decision, no doubt consulted on with the Biden administration, fearing gas lines and political fallout, have made a short-term gain for long-term pain. Bad idea. Another bad mistake. McDonald's has raised wages for U.S. staff as it struggles to find workers. Remember, we've got unemployment far higher than we did during the blue-collar boom. But they are waging. People don't want to go back to work because of the unemployment benefits they're getting. Rational economic decision, by the way. No judgment there. Amazon needs to hire 75,000 people. So they are offering $17 an hour and a $1,000 sign-on bonus. See, the market works when it comes to wages. You don't need to mandate this. In these housing markets, inventory nearly vanished during COVID, the Wall Street Journal today. And then final story, empty lots, angry customers. Chip crisis throws wrench into car business. Car makers have cut production of 1.2 million vehicles in North America because of a shortage of computer chips, losing sales amid high demand. Probably Doug Ducey's greatest legacy in Arizona will be bringing Taiwan Semiconductor and Intel chip manufacturing to the United States and the great state of Arizona. Morning, Glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. It's Hugh Hewitt on a Friday from Israel with Dr. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, former deputy minister in the last standing government of Israel. There have been interim governments since then. Author of a brand new book, which is To All Who Call in Truth. I bought that, by the way, Michael Oren, and narrated. I get the audio book narrated by Graham Winton. I intend to listen to it over the weekend and talk with you about it. Thank you for joining me for a quick 10-minute update. But so much happened overnight. Why don't you summarize for us what the situation is in Israel and whether or not you're reading books or actually obsessing on the news?
obsessing on the news, I must say. Good to be back with you, Hugh. Quite a night. Israeli forces, ground and air forces, naval forces conducted dozens and dozens of bombing attacks at Hamas targets. The major target last night was the sort of this underground warren of tunnels and command centers, known in Hebrew as the metro system, deep underground Gaza. And Israel uses special munitions to penetrate those areas. Apparently, they were all of them or close to all of them blown up. Many terrorists trapped inside, we don't know yet. So the terrorists aren't exactly about to publicize it, but a huge blow to Hamas. But the rocket fire continued, particularly in the south. No rockets in Tel Aviv last night, but pretty much south of here, there were rocket fire. And there shows no sign whatsoever of abating. The Israeli government has approved another round of bombing and has called up reserves for keeping the option open of a ground incursion.
Does the number of reserves equal the number of reserves necessary to actually mount? We talked about that yesterday and Wednesday. Are they at the level yet? Not yet. Okay.
You've got to get around 70,000 reservists. We're not there.
The Army did participate yesterday, though, right? They were part of the shelling.
Part of the shelling, I think there's also been special forces operations that have taken out some of the leadership of Hamas and coordinated with our Shabak, with our FBI. I don't know whether we talked about this yesterday, Hugh, that President Biden spoke with Prime Minister Netanyahu.
We did not.
So let's discuss that for a second, because I think I have a good idea what was in that discussion. And it went something like this. The president said to the prime minister, listen, I'm going to support you. Your right to defend yourself as long as these guys keep on firing rockets at you. But you got to know there's a clock ticking. One clock says, you only have so many days left of fighting, because world opinion is turning against you. My party is turning against you, particularly the progressive wing of that party is going to be turning against you. So I'm going to be under a lot of pressure. And you've got to keep the casualties down, the collateral damage of Palestinian innocent civilians. And of course, Israel is going to do its utmost to do that. But the more we bomb and the more Hamas hides behind these civilians, more of them are going to get killed. So that's the calculus we're dealing with. I'm pretty sure that's what was in that conversation. And so we understand that there are clocks ticking. biggest issue here, though, Hugh, is not Hamas. It's what's going on in our cities.
And what happened last night with regards to the race riots?
Well, there were race riots through the same areas again. There was a little bit of violence in my own town of Jaffa. An Israeli soldier was very seriously injured, beaten up. And Israeli society is now reacting to this, with Arab and Jewish leaders, political, cultural, religious leaders joining together and calling on all of these sides to calm down. I have to contextualize here and say that every single place where this is occurring, in the town of Lod, in Ramla, in certain areas of Haifa, here in Jaffa, it's all occurring in the same type of area. These are underprivileged, very poor neighborhoods where you have gangs. You have Jewish gangs. You have Arab gangs. Many of them are involved with drugs, with crime. They have weapons. These are always flashpoints in any middle-class neighborhood, whether it be in Jerusalem or here in Tel Aviv, where you have Arabs and Jews living together. There's no violence.
Well, that's a relief. Did it increase in a number of people injured and wounded in fires, or was it lesser than the night before?
It was. I my impression was it was lesser. But what happens is the impression is, I think, mitigated by the fact that there have been more use of firearms. And there were several policemen wounded by gunfire last night. And so that's disconcerting because, as I said, many before, these gangs, these neighborhoods have a lot of guns. It kind of sounds familiar to an American listenership.
Yeah, it sounds like Chicago. So I just was stunned. Yesterday, you and I talked about the possibility of Benny Gantz and Benjamin Netanyahu pulling a rabbit out of their hat in order to keep the government intact throughout this crisis. Turns out it's not Tali Bennett. Yeah, he said never count out Netanyahu.
But I also said that Bennett would probably throw in the towel.
And, yes,
that he's in an impossible situation. That he would back down, and literally a couple hours after we spoke, he backed down.
And so, what does that mean? What's the consequence of that? By backing down for the benefit of the people who didn't hear, he's not going to form an anti-BB coalition.
Right. He can't, because the only way the coalition can be put together is with the support of Arab parties, and the Arab parties are supporting Hamas. So he can't do it, especially if you're a Naftali Bennett, if you're a right-winger. You can't do it. Even implicitly, you can't do it. Right now, you know, I always say it's too early to utilize Bibi, but it's also too early to utilize any Israeli politician. It looks like Naftali Bennett is toast. And he's toast because his voters now know that he might have gone with an Arab party. So he loses those voters, and then he's going to lose the voters who wanted him to take down Bibi. So he ends up losing on both ends.
So that's why he wants a guaranteed slot on the Likud list for the fifth round of elections?
Otherwise he is toast. There's just no way he can be the head of his own party.
Is there a way to cobble together a permanent broad-based right-wing party right now? Would Gideon Saar give up because of the crisis and Bennett give up and just form the right-wing government that everybody knows Israel would be represented by well?
Yeah, the thing is that Naftali Bennett joins him with his party, and they're still going to be short. They're still going to need outside support from the Arab Muslim party, the Ram party. They'd have to have Gideon Saar. And Gideon Saar, in contradistinction to Bennett, has sworn again and again he would never join a coalition with Bibi. Never.
But they could keep Gantz, right? They could have the defense minister, who is being a defense minister, and I assume wants to continue to be a defense minister. He could join and make 60-plus, right?
Yeah, but he's sort of in there anyway. And he has that rotation. He wants to be defense minister, but he wants to be prime minister. And according to the rotation agreement, he's going to be prime minister in October. So he's playing his cards very well. You know, Benny Gantz is actually the living proof of the old Israeli political adage that was coined by Eric Sharon. Okay? Eric Sharon said, politics is a wheel, and the main thing is to stay on the wheel.
Yeah.
What Benny Gantz did was stay on the wheel. And the wheel is always turning. And here, Benny Gantz goes from, you know, political disaster. He was toast. And now he could be prime minister.
So the question becomes, if the crisis abates and Bennett remains committed to joining Likud, they go to a fifth round of elections. Would that occur before the rotation agreement?
That is a very, very good question. I think that the, right after the 21 days expires for the anti-BB coalition to put together a coalition, and we're going to come to the end of those 21 days, the Knesset will have another 14 days to put together a government without going to election. I think that it would be in Netanyahu's interest to go to elections, to perhaps have direct elections for a prime minister. That's what he'd like. And that would be his condition for taking the Taliban into the coalition. And then you'd have Bibi as prime, an elected prime minister with a coalition that would include Bennett, maybe Saar, maybe Gantz, certainly the ultra-Orthodox people, all of that.
And that could happen before the rotation agreement occurs and after the crisis is over.
Before the rotation, yeah.
So let's go back in your last 2 minutes. Will this continue through the weekend? It sounds like you have decided, Israel has decided to pummel Hamas in a way it has never done before.
Well, I think our munitions are a little bit smarter than they were. Very good intelligence so far. I just want to reiterate, the clock is ticking. And I've been on the international media, you know, pretty much around the clock. And I'm hearing already, you know, disproportion, you're massacring Palestinians. It doesn't matter the vast majority of Palestinians you've killed so far have been terrorists from Hamas. Okay, they just say, oh, you've killed 90 people. And, you know, that media coverage is going to impact governments, and those governments are going to start putting pressure on the United States, putting pressure on the Security Council. And that's when we're going to start feeling the squeeze. And if we go to a ground operation, we're going to need the United States. We're going to need the United States for many things, including resupply of vital forms of ammunition.
Dr. Michael Oren, thank you. 3 days in a row. And I want to remind people, to all who call in truth, Dr. Oren's book published this weekend. I just got it from Audible. It's read by Graham Winton. People ought to go and read over the weekend so Michael and I can talk about it in the interstices of the discussion next week. Thank you, Dr. Michael Oren from Israel. It's the Friday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Now by the poet laureate of the Hugh Hewitt Show, Tarzana Joe. Hello, Joe.
Hello. You know, it's been a busy news week, but sometimes in the busiest news weeks, you have to look behind the news. Fame can be so fickle, its intentions so unclear. People rise to prominence, and then they disappear. Considering the why of this, as well as what and how, I often wonder to myself, self, where are they now? I'm thinking of the spokesman whose name came to the fore, given daily updates during the last Iraqi war. I have it from some sources, though my sources are disputed, because of his panache, he was quite heavily recruited. History may repeat itself, but certainly it rhymes. Baghdad Bob has got a job. He's at the New York Times. He started at the bottom, which caused him some confusion, until he got the scoop on all that Russian collusion. His skills at obfuscation moved him higher in the biz. He came up with mostly peaceful. Yes, that was his. He mourned an austere cleric. He proclaimed Cuomo a saint. He says the border is secure. My friends, the border ain't. Ask about inflation. He will tell you it's a joke. Gas lines? There's no gas lines because the pipeline isn't broke. His style is delicious, cheerful, bright, and fizzy. And writing those retractions should really keep him busy. That's the Q York Times by Tarzana Joe.
You know, Joe, how do you spell that?
Q York Times. I mean, yeah, just like it sounds.
But not like QAnon, like Q-U-E.
No, well, good, but I mean, you know, the Q seems to be the stand-in for fake, right.
I don't think I want to apply that to anybody. Let me, though, tell you, you had me on edge when you were rhyming. I didn't know if you were going to go with broke or woke. Mm-hmm. As the line, because that's really, you've got an abundance of rhymes with woke.
Well, we do our best.
All right. Yeah, Tarzana
Joe. One at a time. That's the problem.
Business is booming, I hope, at TarzanaJoe.com, where people can send their needs for poetry.
I got a request at 4 a.m. last night.
4 a.m.?
Yeah, got to turn off the old phone
that's
on the nightstand, and there it is, you know.
Oh, that's not a good thing. Did you think about the poem before you went back to sleep?
Yes.
Okay, and well,
I got another one to write.
And will this week's Q, the New York Times, be posted at TarzanaJoe.com?
Of course.
Of course. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, you.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Over at salemnow.com, there's a movie that just debuted called Hope in the Holy Land. Ironically, it debuted even as war engulfed Israel. Now, I've had the makers of this film on before, Todd Moorhead and Justin Cron. And at the time I had them on to talk about Hope in the Holy Land, I did not know that they were going to be on Salem Now. I just had them on because I loved the movie and I watched it. It's wonderful. Todd and Justin, welcome back. First, let me ask you, your hearts must be breaking over what's going on right now, Todd. I'll start with you. It's a terrible situation in Israel right now.
Hey, good morning, Hugh. Yes, it is. It's really sad. It's really tragic. And it seems, even from what I hear from my friends on the ground, it's different this time. It's even worse. So, yeah, it's sad times over in Israel.
So, Justin, in light of that, hope in the Holy Land, do you still hold on to that thought?
Yeah, I do. When you look at the Abraham Accords that just happened, right, this past year, you've got countries, Muslim-dominated countries, who are accepting Israel's right to exist. And that really is at what's at the root, what's at the cause of this conflict is the continued rejection of Israel's right to exist as the sovereign Jewish state of the Jewish people. So when I see agreements like that that are made, that gives me hope. When I encounter, like we did on this journey of discovery that's captured in the film, where we met Palestinians who don't toe the party line with the Palestinian Authority or with Hamas, who don't want to get on board with that agenda, then yeah, that gives me hope.
Well, it is an antidote to despair. The film is Hope in the Holy Land. It can only be watched at salemnow.com. Todd, you're the narrator, you're the explorer. We talked about this before. But do you think any of the Palestinians you talked with or any of the Israeli Jews that you talked with when you made Hope in the Holy Land, it's all shot in Israel. It's beautiful, by the way, if people just want to relive their experiences in the Holy Land. Do you think any of those people are involved in the Arab on Israeli violence, Jewish Israeli violence, or the Jewish Israeli on Arab Israeli violence, which is sweeping the country this week? It's like talking about race relations could get better in Los Angeles in the middle of the 1992 riots.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. The people I interviewed in a sit-down interview, no way. I don't think that they weren't the type of people. Those were the peacemakers. They were the ones that Justin's referring to, the courageous ones, not willing to bend to the Palestinian narrative. But I could see some of the man on the street interviews that we did in the Palestinian territories. I could see some of those guys. Actually, I could see almost all of them getting in on it. They were kind of priming for it, even as I was talking to them.
Now, Jewish Israelis, Todd, are involved in the violence. I want to be very clear about that. But my friend Michael Oren, who's been on the show 3 days in a row from Israel, says he is shocked by the Arab-Israeli-Jewish-Israeli violence. He's just shocked. It's never happened like this since 1948. So, Todd, tell people about the film and why they should watch it right now in the middle of this explosion of wrath.
Yeah, I'll take a stab at that, and then I think Justin should follow up with his thought as well.
Okay.
Well, there's so much confusion, especially when it comes to who should I, and we don't like to pick sides, but who should I side with here? You know, we know that it seems like, we all have always supported Israel in the past, but look at the Palestinians, they're suffering and they seem to be victims, and there's two narratives going on. So you've got to understand the narratives and what is happening, and Hope in the Holy Land will give you insight into the narratives and what's really going on. It is so crucial to understand those. And by understanding those, I think after people watch the film, they'll understand exactly what's going on in the Holy Land right now. Because nothing's new.
Justin, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just think there's frustration on the ground within Israel. I mean, it's a democracy. You've got people who are on the right, who are on the left. One of the situations that kind of sparked this conflict, which, let's be honest, I think it was more of a pretext, which for Hamas to attack Israel. But the situation in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of six families, Muslim Arab families who were being evicted from their homes. You have a lot of Arabs who live in Israel who sympathized with those families. And so you're seeing differences of opinion. And then you throw fuel on the flame, like we're seeing here with the violent clashes. And it's going to just increase even more so. So it is hard to understand a little bit. It's difficult to see. I know, as you mentioned, there really hasn't been these type of clashes between Jews and Arabs in Israel in the past.
So, Justin, give people a sense of what they'll see when they go to salemnow.com and watch Hope in the Holy Land.
They're going to see an absolutely beautiful and challenging journey through the Holy Land, and meeting people, real people on the ground who are experiencing different challenges, but yet in the midst of those challenges, some of them are courageously loving their neighbors and even their enemies and risking their lives to do so. So they're going to be able to better sort through, I think, a lot of the misinformation that they get in the mainstream media about the conflict, about the people. A lot of times we assume that all Palestinians or all Israelis believe exactly the same thing. And they're going to see that there's some differences of opinion, especially within the Palestinian territories. It's important that they actually connect with the people and that remember that there's real people on the ground whose lives are being impacted by this.
And Todd, you've made a movie about Israel before. You want to tell people your background? You're the surfing evangelist, and you went to Israel to surf, I think. Wasn't that the original?
Oh, I'm the surfy evangelical. But
yeah, there you go.
Yes, I've been to Israel almost 30 times, but a lot of my contacts over there are surfers, and the first movie I made was called Promised Land, and it was a fun story of Israel, but told through the eyes of the surfers who lived there. I have a lot of experience in Israel. I have a lot of friends. Hope in the Holy Land delve way deeper into some of the, into the conflict issues and took me more into the West Bank and Judea and Samaria and talking to people on the ground. I have a lot of friends over there and I love it deeply. Can't wait to go back. I miss it.
Yeah, Todd, when you came to the studio to talk about this, I was struck by your hope for everything. And we did not know that Hope in the Holy Land would be on salemnow.com. I had no idea at that point. So it's kind of ironic and wonderful that you ended up there. How is the film doing? Are people watching it even in the middle of a war?
Yeah, but we don't actually, we don't see the numbers yet. So we hear things from our friends that have downloaded it and stuff like that, but it's fresh. It has just come out. So I guess we'll have to talk to the guys at Salem Now to see how it's doing.
But yeah, I can do that. All right, we'll come back in a couple of weeks. There's always a line in the film business, which is that controversy never hurts an opening. And so, Justin, are you trusting in that all of a sudden everyone's talking about Israel and here's a new movie about Israel made by an evangelical, and so Hope in the Holy Land will do better than it would have otherwise done?
Yeah, several people reached out to me and just said, can you believe the timing of your release? And no, we can't. Like, it's just it's like divine providence in some respects. And so we're encouraged in some ways by that, that people's attention is on the subject. And so hopefully the film will be able to answer a lot of their questions. But we're encouraged. The early praise so far from many, they've said it's the most fair and balanced depiction of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that they've ever seen. And that was one of our goals when we set out to make the film. And so to get that type of feedback, especially at a time like this where people are interested in getting answers, is very encouraging for us.
Todd Moorhead, Justin Cron, the makers of Hope in the Holy Land. Great to have you on. It's at salemnow.com. I recommend to everyone head over to salemnow.com this weekend. If you want more context for the awful events in Israel, they are awful events. I know Todd and Justin wished and prayed that they would never happen. But if you want to understand the context of the conflict, I think this movie does it very well. Todd is an extraordinary host, and Justin and Todd are terrific, terrific filmmakers. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.